All right. Thanks a lot.
Good evening. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Economic Update with Richard Wolff came to you on recording over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 7 o'clock is Off the Hook. Please stay tuned.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again. If you need help, stay on the line and a hacker will assist you shortly.
Very good evening, for everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Out on the Skype line, we have Alex.
Hello, everybody. Good evening.
What part of the world are you in now, Alex?
I'm back in Pennsylvania right now.
Okay, how delightful. We had an interesting day today. In fact, I think most of the country had an interesting day today because we had all kinds of emergency alerts being triggered on our phones and TV stations and radio stations. I believe WBAI was participating as well. We had a lot of fun monitoring everything that we could. Alex, did anything crazy happen out in Pennsylvania?
No, not very much. You know, I got the alert. I got the EIS system alert. It came in English. It was... It wasn't garbled. Everything seemed to work just fine, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, mine came in Spanish first. In fact, a lot of people seem to have gotten it in Spanish before they got it in English. You know, I'm not really complaining or anything like that. I can kind of figure out that there's an emergency going on just from the tones. But it was a couple of minutes early as well, so that was a little surprising. But then at about 20 minutes after 2, I tried to tape every TV station there was using the DVR that our cable company has. So I was able to tape, I think, 14 different channels. That's when I ran out of space. For the most part, stations seem to do the same thing. Basically, have this banner up on top that just kind of gave the same message. Although what was weird was the audio message said that the time period was between 2:20 and 2:40, but the printed message said 2:20 and 2:50. So that seemed to be true with every channel that aired that particular phrase. CNN did something really weird. They were talking about that particular thing, and they suddenly went to commercial, like very quickly, mid-sentence. And by the time they got back, it was over, and they never did it. I don't know if cable companies were supposed to even, or cable networks were supposed to even do this, because News 12 also didn't have a test broadcast.
You noticed this, and it was so abrupt that it seemed like they wanted to observe it internally but not actually air it because it was so widely known that it was a test and it was going on, and they just assumed run those ads instead and evaluate it as best they can from an engineering perspective, you know?
Yeah, there were some fun things to look for. Channel 13 and Channel 21, they're both owned by the same PBS affiliate, and they both, after the test, went to a frozen image of a different TV program that wasn't airing on either station. So that was kind of amusing to see that. Let's see, Channel 7, actually it wasn't Channel 7, it was Channel 9. Had no audio alert whatsoever. I feel like I'm ratting them out, but it's true. This is what happened. They had their, and I gotta tell you, programming in the middle of the day is so terrible on television. I don't watch TV in the middle of the day, but boy, it's bad. Channel 9 apparently felt it wasn't bad enough to mute because they kept it going, and I just had a quick blue text screen up on top, and it just went over, no alert tones, nothing, and that's really not how the test is supposed to work. Channel 2, WCBS, they had a commercial on at the time the test went over. Apparently, they didn't feel like turning down the commercial. They kept the commercial up. So there was this collision of audio where you had the spoken voice telling you there was an emergency going on, but you also had their products being sold at full volume. So it was really, really sloppy on Channel 2. Channel 41, WXTV in New Jersey, they aired it late, 10 minutes late. No audio alert. They just showed the banner up on top. It was red, and it basically faded out mid-message and then came back and then faded out mid-message again. So that was a bit of mayhem over there, I guess. But for the most part, you know, everyone got their alerts, and there wasn't that much panic. And I guess we're going to say this was a success. What do you think, Kyle?
Well, they don't have to use the backup date. It seemed like the test went out, and the actual test was the response, and so sending it early kind of makes sense. I thought that was interesting. It seemed like unofficially it was sent early, and then
the phone message was
the actual out. Activity of the messages going out was pretty much done by 20 after.
Yeah, the phone message was sent early, and then the TV. And there's a lot to tackle in one day. When we did this a few years ago, do you remember we gathered downstairs in the cafe and we had a bit of a party? All these people came. They all brought their phones, and it was mayhem and all kinds of audio alerts. Which, by the way, you're not supposed to broadcast. It's very difficult not to broadcast that if every single phone in the room is going off with those tones. But when they did that, did they also do TV and radio on the same day? Same time? I'm not sure they did all of it at the same. I think they did it at a different time. Alex, do you remember?
I don't recall if it, you know, at what cadence they performed these. But I do remember the party that we had, and it was a hell of a lot of fun.
I remember at the time it seemed to be a big emphasis on the wireless handset aspect of it and cell carriers generally, because I think maybe in various emergencies, SMS and other voice services were either intermittent or not as reliable, and this system has to work. So it seemed like they were introducing it as those kinds of phones are so ubiquitous now. So maybe they are doing it in tandem with other media and broadcast mechanisms this time, but I don't remember as much radio and television from them.
What's interesting, if I'm reading this correctly, I'm looking at an old news story. The first test took place on October 3rd, 2018. And today's October 4th, 2023. So it seems this is when they want to do it, this particular time of the year, this particular time of that month. But what's interesting about that, 2018, 5 years ago, you know what also happened 5 years ago? No? Nobody knows? The last Maker Faire in New York City. That's what happened 5 years. I don't know if this is a coincidence. but it sure seems a bit odd that both these things happened in 2018 last. Maker Faire, it was this amazing gathering that we look forward to every year. Every year.
As much as we could, we would anticipate this, come up with new ideas even. We really got into the spirit of it, mainly because of all the other groups and all the other people there visiting or presenting stuff. And it just, it became this exciting autumn tradition. And people would, I don't know, they would recognize what we were doing. We would share things that we thought would be fun for some of the visitors there. And it was an amazing thing to watch emerge and grow and to keep up with, because there were so many different cool things that people were trying out and displaying. And I don't know, it was just a great shot in the arm for us, especially after running HOPE conferences sometimes, and it would be right after, and it'd be a great opportunity to get out there and share all about what we're doing, and then see what is intriguing and what people are tinkering with. So it was in this incredible science center that basically was taken over by Maker Faire. They had all of this, and we would have with vendors and lots, but we would be only a small part of something so big.
It was just cool to have this this event happen every year in New York City. We met so many people, and it was just such a celebration of technology, of making, hacking, young people getting together and trading their science knowledge and learning so much. But it all came crashing to an end I believe, June of 2019 was when they announced that Maker Media was going out of business. And since then, people have been trying to figure out how to make up for this, how to do something else. I'm happy to say, after 5 years, it's time. It's time. And this weekend, coming up, Maker Faire returns to New York City. We have with us tonight three people that are helping to make that happen. We have, please speak up when I say your name so that we know that we have a connection. We have Elijah Horland.
Hello.
We have Scott Schubert.
Greetings.
And we have Becky Button.
Hey there.
How you doing? Actually, Becky, I want to read something that you wrote back in 2019 concerning the end of Maker Faire. This is on Twitter, back when it was known as Twitter, back when it served a purpose. You said the end of Maker Faire is by no means the end of making, but for some of us, it limits who we can connect with. There are a ton of people that I met because of Maker Faire who all had a very profound impact on my life, some of them legit, who read my college apps. And that sentiment was echoed so many times in so many ways, and I think it was summed up very well there. Let's go to Scott to start with, because you are the chief executive officer, if I'm not mistaken, of Maker Faire Coney Island, and that, yes, that reveals where Maker Faire is going to be this weekend. But Scott, how did you get involved in the rebirth of Maker Faire?
Well, don't hold me to this, but I think I first heard of Maker Faire from Off the Hook in 2012.
Wow. Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, and in 2013, so I went to 2012 and I just had a blast. It was just very exciting. And I was blown away by all the projects and the makers. And I heard Sherry Huss, talking about it on your show. So 2013, I had a friend from Coney Island who was doing a project at Maker Faire and was doing a full body 3D scanner. His name is the Great Fredini, a.k.a. Fred Call. And he scanned, I was his assistant, but we scanned all of the Maker Faire crew. They did miniatures and they made a chess set out of it. And that kind of started my Maker Faire, love. But for many years, I was a helper at Maker Faire, working with people on different projects. And when it disappeared in 2018, I was as devastated as anybody, because I really looked forward to it and to all of the camaraderie and all of the learning from each other that everyone did, you know, the amazing things that were there and the way that kids were just really excited to learn about science and math and that sort of stuff without even knowing it. I mean, they kind of, you know, got into it without realizing it. But so when the opportunity came, I think, you know, Coney Island is a place that has a rich history of invention and fun kind of merged together. And I love Coney Island. I grew up in Brighton Beach in Coney Island. My grandfather was the lighthouse keeper there.
Wow.
So I just love the neighborhood and I love the history of it. And a few of us sort of at the same time kind of came up with the idea, you know, if they do another Maker Faire, they should do one in Coney Island. And it slowly morphed into, well, let's do it ourselves. You know, let's put it together ourselves. Let's see if we can make this a reality. And that sort of turned into, oh, we are doing this. Okay. You know, and it was something that we were all kind of excited to do. We didn't know how it would work, but we, you know, I met with Sherry Huss and I got her advice. She gave me a lot of great people to connect with. And so that's sort of how I got started, but just from the love of it, really.
I definitely want to learn more about that lighthouse. That sounds intriguing. But let's talk to some of our other guests. Becky, you know, you're a musician, you're an avant-garde engineer. If I understand, you grew up on a farm where you learned how to build all kinds of things, and you became one of the leading makers at this event. What does it mean to you that Maker Faire is back?
I mean, Maker Faire is huge. Just having that physical space that's gathering all these people who have just spent so much time, you know, working on projects and contributing to projects and sharing their knowledge with the world. Just being in a space where you can interact with people like that is huge. You know, I think I've met many of my Maker friends initially through Twitter, but I think the magic happens when you can physically share space with people, show people your projects in person. There's a lot of really great ideas that get exchanged whenever you're at a Maker Faire, and there's a lot of fun to be had. I mean, we're talking about ideas, we're talking about all this, that, and the other, but it's also nice to just, like, go get a drink with somebody you know from Maker Faire. There's just so many interesting stories that are exchanged in this kind of place, and I don't know, it's just really beautiful to, like, to me, to be able to put faces to names of people that I've read about online, their work, and I've just had a really great deal of respect for. I've been able to meet so many people that I've looked up to because of Maker Faire. I'm thinking about Becky Stern, Lady Ada, you know, all these people. It's incredible.
And you have, I believe, a DIY software-based guitar pedal that you will be showing off at Maker Faire.
I do. I've been working with two of my friends on this project. I did most of the engineering for this, and my friend Jason Garwood has done a lot of the what we're calling experience architecting, and my friend Rowan Dunlop has been doing the producing for this project. So I'm very excited to be working on this team with such amazing people.
Now, Elijah, you've been involved in Maker Faire for quite some time. You started building computers at age 9, I believe, and people might know you from MythBusters Jr. How did you get involved in this incarnation?
So with Maker Faire, I wouldn't have gotten on to MythBusters Jr. if it weren't for Maker Faire. But I started off with, I signed up to be part of the 2016 New York Maker Faire street team, you know, putting up posters to get a free ticket in. And just my first year there, I met so many people who would change my life, like, forever. Like I said, the whole MythBusters Jr. thing, I wouldn't have gone on Twitter or now X. You know,
well, we don't have to say that.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to mention what's happened to it. But yeah, I wouldn't have gone on Twitter initially if it weren't for one of the people working in the Velman booths at the 2016 New York City Maker Faire. And if that had never happened, I would have never met like any of my online friends, one of which is Allie Weber, who told me about the MythBusters Junior auditions. So I have like a lot to thank for Maker Faire. It's also just like a great place in terms of sharing, getting inspiration from other projects. Like, Becky, your wearable sandal, the Wi-Fi, sorry, can you...
Wi-Fi DL thing?
Yeah, Wi-Fi DL thing sandals. Those were so crazy, and they, like, it was my first introduction to sort of a, almost, like, semi-malicious, not really malicious, like, you know.
Well, if I understand, wearable. This is a sandal that kicks people off Wi-Fi. Do I have that right?
I'm calling it an educational tool, just before we say anything crazy on air. It's an educational tool. But it is a sandal with a piece of hardware in it that sends the encryption packets to an access point. And it's to teach people about vulnerabilities in access points and the importance of, you know, making sure your things are up to date because there's security vulnerabilities. But yes.
Fascinating. Wow. Elijah, go ahead.
And, oh, yeah, from there, I just, after it was announced that the New York City Maker Faire wouldn't be happening anymore, I was devastated, just like the rest of you. But that night, I had gone to, or it was either that night or somewhere very close to it, I had gone and seen fireworks at Coney Island, and I had passed by some big lots of empty space, and I thought, hey, why don't we just put the Maker Faire here? And then COVID happened, and it put a little bit of a dent in my planning. But then I got right back around to it when COVID ended, and I got the, you know, I started speaking with Make, I got some locations, I got the license to run the Maker Faire, and we're here. Everything's really snowballed since everything opened back up.
Well, one thing, though, one very important thing, did you watch Mr. Robot?
Okay, I started watching Mr. Robot, I loved it, and then I realized I did not have enough time because during my everything, you know, planning, doing stuff for Coney Island Maker Faire, doing stuff for school,
mm-hmm.
I realized I may have chosen the wrong major, and so I might want to put more time into thinking about switching.
Well,
it's really a time thing.
Do you mind if I delay graduation, okay. Finish Mr. Robot, because that's important, and it's, in fact, there's a Mr. Robot quote on the Maker Faire page, what if changing the world was just about being here by showing up no matter how many times we get told we don't belong? From Elliot Aldous and Mr. Robot. And for those who don't know, a large part of that series about hacking takes place right there on Coney Island. And I imagine there'll be several pilgrimages to that exact location where they did their hacking misdeeds. But Scott, I want to ask you, as the CEO, you're pretty much familiar with the various challenges in the day-to-day operations of running something like this. You know, I think many of us in the past, we saw Maker Faire, we saw 100,000 people showing up in Queens, and nobody thought something like that could fail, and it did. Have lessons been learned? Is there a way that we can ensure that this doesn't fall victim to something like that in the future?
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because we're doing the old adage of building the airplane while you're flying it, right? Well, this is our first year doing it. We're definitely learning as we go. And we were, you know, I spoke with Sherry Huss to say, like, what do we need to do right and what do we need, you know, to avoid? And ask people that have been there before and just really get some good advice. That helps a lot. But the other thing is, I think part of the problem with Maker Faire traditionally, because you know, I was a helper for God knows how long, but is that I think part of it was that it grew too large, or it grew too large too quickly. Mm-hmm. It was almost a gigantic endeavor that took a lot of great, amazing people to run and did, you know, had so many crazy things that were great to see. But I can't imagine something of that size in 2018 and the work that would have to go into it. But, you know, we're starting, I can't say we're starting small because we're not really, we're makers, hackers, and we want to kind of add in as much as we can, right? People come to us and they say they want to be involved and they want to join and they want to show off the stuff. And we say, of course, you know, like, it's very hard to say no to anyone. So we just try to find the space. We try to make it work and hold it together with duct tape. But, you know, one of the things that we are looking at is, you know, utilizing the location as well as possible. We are going to be located in the Coney Island Amphitheater, which is down on the boardwalk by the parachute jump. And the good thing is they do concerts all the time. They've had, you know, Foo Fighters and a lot of famous bands play there. So they're very experienced. So we told them, you know, whatever your advice is for us, let us know. We want to follow the rules. We want to, you know, make sure everything goes smoothly. And the other thing that is sort of on our side, which, you know, may have been a challenge with the original Maker Faire, is that we're all from the area. So we all kind of know the area. We know Brooklyn. We know New York. You know, I think Elijah and his dad and I all got connected originally because they came to Coney Island and they were talking to the unofficial mayor of Coney Island, Dick Zigan, who is kind of the man that knows everyone over there. And he is a friend of mine. And he said, oh, you're interested in Maker Faire. I have a friend who has done Maker Faire. You know, you should talk to Scott. And that's sort of how we got connected. But having those connections on the ground really help us. You know, the people that run the Mermaid Parade in Coney Island every year, as well as people that were volunteers at the former Maker Faire. So people that know what they're doing, people that do these events. You know, even Hope, even the Hope Conference, which I've gone to many times, sort of taking best practices, whatever we could learn from that. So really just trying to make the most of people's knowledge and also taking advantage of being locals, I think, has helped a lot.
Absolutely, yes. And Coney Island is definitely a magical community. If people listening have not been there, it's certainly one of the places in New York that everyone has to go to numerous times, I think. Very easy to get to. A lot of subway lines terminate in Coney Island. Once people get there, is it fairly easy to navigate from one part of Maker Faire to another?
Yes, so the primary location is going to be the Coney Island Amphitheater, and what we are going to do is have very easy to follow instructions when you get out of the subway or if you take, you know, a car. We hope people take public transportation because it is so abundant over there and it is so easy. You don't have to worry about parking, obviously. But, you know, one of the things that helps us is we have the parachute jump over there, the giant red sculpture that used to be used for army training and then was a ride. But it's easy to spot from almost all of the area. So
giant sky beacon. Just go look for that.
Yep.
Exactly. The Eiffel Tower of Brooklyn, it's referred to. So that helps us a lot because we can just kind of point people in that direction and then lead them from there. What we're also looking to do is have plenty of signage, plenty of information, and things along the way. We were working with a lot of local businesses and local communities to see, you know, if they'll let us put up signs, let us, you know, have helpers along the way, have tents and that sort of thing. So we're going to try and make it as easy as possible and get the information out as easily as possible and have it on our website, too, ConeyIslandMakerFaire.com.
Becky, it sounds like you have something to say. Oh, I'm sorry. I misread. But a question, will people be on the beach? Will they be making use of all the space there as well?
We can't officially say that they'll be on the beach, but I'm sure there will be many makers taking advantage of it, especially potentially the first robotics teams and the other robot teams and drone teams. You know, it's kind of funny because obviously there are certain rules with drones and and robots and that sort of thing. So having them in the venue is one thing, but I'm sure we'll have a lot of makers that want to take advantage of the beach for their photo ops and for some of their, you know, playing with their creations.
Well, and science.
It'll be
yeah.
Great.
What you can do on the boardwalk with robots, I can't even imagine how much fun that can be.
Yeah, we can't wait. I mean, that's part of the fun, too, is, like, we want to see what people do, too, you know, like, I'm hoping I'm not working the whole time. I want to wander around.
A robot race from Coney Island to Brighton Beach. What do you think about that on the boardwalk? Huh? That could be something.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. But, yeah, so it's the imagination is just boggling at what's possible here. So, okay, let's say somebody's listening and have absolutely no technical background whatsoever, and they're considering going to this thing over the weekend. And we'll get into specifics about hours and things like that. What is it that somebody without that technical knowledge, somebody who's not actually building something themselves, what can they get out of this event?
Maker Faire has no minimum level of entry in terms of technical knowledge. I'm actually going to be doing a Learn to Solder booth, which has a very simple just PCB and button battery soldering kit. So it's literally any level of technical knowledge is welcome here. But, you know, if you really do not know a lot about computers and such, Maker Faire is a great place to start. I mean, I started going to Maker Faires when I was very young, and I know for a fact that I would not know as much as I do now if I didn't, you know, just go.
Alex, did you have something?
Sure. I want to ask about, you know, the focus on kids at Maker Faire eras. I can't believe it has been 5 years since the last one, and one of my fondest memories of the last Maker Faire was walking around with my then 5-year-old, or 6-year-old, I guess, at this point, and he saw essentially a replica of R2-D2, and he believed that it was the real R2-D2 at that point, and was so incredibly awestruck that R2-D2 was at the Maker Faire, and he kept going on and on about it. And as we were walking back to the subway to go back to Manhattan, he was telling me, you know, Dad, I cannot believe that R2-D2 was there today. That was the coolest thing. And he said to me, and I'll never forget, he says, you know, Dad, you know he's a real hero? He's an actual hero? So I thought that was just one of these magical moments that I think he'll never forget and I'll never forget. And I think there's a lot of those at Maker Faire. So tell me more about the kids aspect.
The kids aspect, they will be if they don't currently have like an understanding of any computers, they will be just amazed by what they see. I think we have a 10-foot-tall flamethrower trumpets showing up, and that's something you couldn't see anywhere else but a Maker Faire. So there will definitely be those magical moments for everyone of all ages. If I'm being honest, I'd be entertained by 10-foot-tall flamethrowing trumpets. I wish I could just watch them.
My niece is 8, and I'm excited. She was too young in 2018, and so this will be her first Maker Faire. She really wants to help, which will be kind of funny because, you know, she wants me to put her to work, and then she'll be too distracted for that, basically, I think. But it's one of those great events where I think, you know, part of the fun, even as a helper with Maker Faire, is seeing the kids get interested in this stuff. And because there's such a variety of makers, right? Makers come in all shapes and sizes. Makers can be artists. They can be musicians. They can be robot builders, or they can be crafters, you know, food creators. There's always something to really catch the imagination and inspire the next generation. And that's sort of the funny thing, like, even with Alex, you know, same thing with me. I can't believe it's been 5 years and these kids are growing up so fast. But there's always a next generation that comes in and gets inspired by this stuff. And their parents, you know, take them to see what this is all about and kind of get that spark. And one of the best parts of Maker Faire is that you do go, if you do go, you know, year after year, you'll see people that, you know, maybe their kids came and the kids the next year have their own project and they want to show it off, and people come back and are inspired by each other. And so that's part of the reason I think that Maker Faire is so popular, because people realize that even if you're not, you know, you're new to these things, you can still learn and you can still create something and you can show it off and you can learn from one another and make it better. And so it's a ever changing, ever improving kind of entity. And that's why I think we felt so upset about it when it was gone.
Elijah, you mentioned you're doing a soldering workshop, I believe.
Yes, I'm doing a soldering workshop. I'm teaching anyone of any age to learn how to solder.
That's great.
It's an important skill.
It really is. It really is.
I've had multiple times where I've bought, like, crappy USB lights off of Amazon. And, you know, the USB cable tears. It's just really nice to know how to solder that back on instead of throwing the whole thing away.
If you're listening to this and you do not have a soldering gun in your home, or a soldering pen, you're missing out. Alex, you're talking on the phone and on the air at the same time. Okay. Yes. So I wanted to ask if you guys work with schools at all.
Yes, Lincoln High School. We're partnering with their drone team. There's going to be some events happening in the ballpark, I believe, on Friday.
Cool.
That's amazing. As much as that is as is possible is really exciting. It's one of the reasons I think we got so interested, because a lot of hackers are becoming parents, and the ability to have all kinds of stuff, all kinds of activities to really get people engaged and share that excitement across generations in that spot is excellent.
Yeah, definitely.
It also helps pull in a lot of the, you know, the modern Brooklyn culture. I mean, where else are you going to find the most authentic culture than with high schoolers, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking not only high schoolers, but, you know, Maker Faires in the past. You see kids really young. I mean, Alex had his five-year-old there, and you see kids younger than that who are really into the technology and know quite a few things. In fact, soldering is one of the things they seem to be drawn towards because they're much more nimble with their fingers. They're able to do things that adults can't.
Yes, the dexterity and everything. And I would say that seeing students and young people working with this kind of stuff, lights and all of the kind of cool stuff, got me interested because I was like, well, I never had an opportunity. We didn't have the same kind of hobbies, and our electronics classes were a little different. It involved like etching things, and it was a little more cumbersome. So I got into ignited my interest, and I think so many people, they might not be aware of how amazing an experience that can be to kind of have a little bit of jealousy, like, oh, man, you know, but then realize, wow, this is for everyone, and I can dive in just the same as anyone else, and we're all kind of meeting our own interests and skill levels where they are and trying to help everybody out.
What I was getting at, though, when I was asking Elijah about soldering workshops, I was wondering, are there going to be lockpicking workshops as well?
Yes, so we have the organization Girls Who Hack, and they are going to be talking about different things. They promote hacking in general and the various aspects of it, but they will be also talking about and teaching lockpicking. They want to get the word out that, you know, girls and women can be hackers too, and technology people too, and it's a great organization. They're working to get more equality in STEM and STEAM areas and fields, you know, that were traditionally dominated by men. And so that's one good way to do it. I think, especially with young people and kids, if they can see someone that looks like them, or if they can see someone doing something that they can see themselves in, then they'll go out and do it, you know. And that's, so it's a great organization at the same time, but yes, definitely a lock-picking extravaganza, and, you know, what we have to make sure we have good locks on all our stuff around, so it's, you know, so we're prepared for the graduates of these classes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the less...
Go ahead.
Oh, on the less technical and, you know, complicated task side, we have the paper crafts and puppet-making tables if you are interested in...
Wow.
Physical crafts.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I remember that from the old Maker Faires, people doing things like that with crafting and all. That's fascinating. Becky, I wanted to ask you, since you come from a different environment, you know, growing up on a farm, how do you think people out there in similar environments can get drawn into the communities of makers and hackers and crafters and all that?
Well, I guess when I was living back home, right now I'm in Pittsburgh, when I was living back home in Milford, Virginia, I think the biggest barrier to entry at the time was just the fact that we couldn't have internet access. When I was going through like high school and all that, like you could barely get a satellite signal. If they throttled you after you used like a gig or two, you'd have to like, if you wanted to use it, there was an open time around like from like 3 to 5 a.m. that you could do whatever you wanted. And I think that at that point in time, the biggest barrier was internet. Now there's been a lot of changes. Now Starlink's out where I live. My folks back home have it. I think the big thing now is just, I think it's more of like a school system thing, like just making sure that the schools have, you know, resources needed, whether that's teachers, whether that's money, to fund these programs and give these kids opportunities to learn these skills.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you think is moving in a positive direction? Is there more access these days? Are schools supportive of the kinds of things that Maker Faire does?
I think generally speaking, so. You know, me and my brother used to run workshops centered around learning and teaching these, you know, how to use an Arduino skills. I think that the biggest gap is really like a people gap, just like making sure that there's people in these places that have this information. I think it is moving generally in this direction, but I think that there's a lot of work to be done in rural communities because there's just not as many people, you know, going off getting electrical engineering degrees and then coming back to rural America, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame. That's a shame. Yeah. I wish they would more. Wow. So let's get to specifics. When does it start? Where do people go exactly? Anything else you think people should know? Scott, I'll give this to you.
Sure. So it's going to be Friday through Sunday, October 6th through the 8th, and it is from 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. So the weekday is harder for some people. Obviously, you're welcome to come on the weekend or during the week. And tickets are on sale at ConeyIslandMakerFair.org. Fair is spelled with an E at the end. I know that's one of the things that's troubled people in the past. you can get tickets there. You can get more information there. But it's basically going to be this weekend. It's going to be all weekend, rain or shine. The Coney Island Amphitheater, where we are having it, is completely enclosed and covered. So we will be fine. We will just stay away from the edges just in case if Saturday we have a little bit of rain. You know, the one that was in Queens was kind of in, it was in the Hall of Science, but it was really outside around the Hall of Science.
Yes, yes.
So if it rained, you were out of luck, unless you were in the building. So I think we'll be in better shape definitely as far as that goes. The other thing is we have a couple of special programs for, teachers and educators. We have classes that they can get credit from the Department of Education on Friday if they sign up. That is also on the website. And on Sunday, we are going to have our drone and robot competitions at the nearby Maimonides Ballpark, which is the home of the Brooklyn Cyclones minor league baseball team.
Oh, wow.
We actually were very lucky. There's a woman that works there named Courtney. Thank you, Courtney. She has been awesome helping us, and she is a first robotics veteran. So she was very excited, maybe more excited than we were, when they decided to say yes and greenlight our project. So Sunday is going to be all of our drone and robot competitions there. We will have drones and robots the rest of the weekend, but all the competition stuff will be on Sunday. So that's ConeyIslandMakerFair.org, and fair has an E at the end.
Now, I believe Friday wasn't initially open to the public, and now it is. Is that true?
That's right, yes. So that's a special thing that we're doing. Because of the weather kind of on Saturday, we figured why not just open it up. We're going to have all the makers and people setting up on Friday anyway. So come on down if you're interested, and we're going to have a special deal on Friday. And if you check out the website, you can see it's going to be I think it's maybe half price, but it's a special deal to get people down. Obviously, people are working or in school, but if you can make it, we'd love to have you, and then you can come enjoy the nice sunshine.
I want to ask all of you this in regards to Maker Faire, its future and all that. What's on your wish list? What do you want to see?
I'm hoping to see just a transformation of what Maker Faire New York is this year, at least. The last Maker Faires I felt in New York City kind of felt more like they were airdropping the West Coast Fair over here. It was more Maker Faire New York and not really New York Maker Faire. So I'm hoping to see more New York culture injected into this one.
Well, being in Coney Island is definitely a good start to accomplishing that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, I was a fan and I did watch all of Mr. Robot, so we would love to incorporate that. We didn't have time to really incorporate the El Dorado Arcade, which is over there, and that's where they filmed a lot of the show and also built a soundstage that looked exactly like it. Mm-hmm. But in general, one of the things that I was really interested in doing, and hopefully we pull off, is incorporating the variety of makers, you know, focusing on different types of makers and food makers, beverage makers, artists, crafters, people that aren't just in electronics, you know, as much as I love electronics, and really getting involved people from different backgrounds representing the, you know, beautiful diversity that we have in New York and Brooklyn, and really being representative of everyone that is kind of here, and opening it up, you know. And that's why I said it's hard to say no, but we hope it also continues and we can grow and basically just rebuild a family, I think, over here of New York Maker Fair.
Awesome. Becky?
I mean, I think my desires for Maker Faire are pretty simple. I think it's always been about just, like, seeing the cool technology out there. And by technology, I also mean weaving. Like, I think anything where there's a great amount of skill and dedication to you know, perfecting the craft, I want to learn from these people, and I want to see people's projects. I want people to look at my work and ask me questions and question why I've made certain decisions, because I think that it's really beautiful, like, feedback cycle to go into Maker Faire Coney Island when you've made something that you think other makers would like, you know, kind of learn from the people that you want to make things for and with. I just want to see cool projects. Like, I think that's really all I want from Coney Island Maker Faire. And I think it's happening. It's done, you know?
Well, that's kind of related to what I wanted to ask you next. You've been working at this for a while, all three of you, along with many others. Is the response what you expected? Did anything surprise you?
I think the response has been great. We had a lot of people that were kind of interested early on and wrote to us and said, you know, when is it? Where do I go? And we had to tell them, you know, we just started. We don't have tickets on sale. We don't have a venue and all these things. So we had to work through all of that, obviously. But we really did have a great response. We sent out a call for volunteers early on, and we had a lot of people show up at an event we had in person and raise their hand and say, you know, what can we do? And we didn't have too much, you know, in the beginning for people to do yet, but it was great to know that we had that community and we could reach out to them, you know, for when the time comes, for obviously for now. But, you know, it was a great response. I think one of the things that's been sort of interesting but a challenge is some people don't realize it's back, you know, and that's why we're trying to get the word out. But that's always going to be, I think, the challenge with doing it the first year. You know, once you sort of get the momentum going, people say, okay, so when's the next one? When's the next one? And so I think it'll be great. We have had a good response from people. I think people are excited. I know we're excited. And so hopefully this helps get the word out some more.
You know, in a weird way, having a COVID occur when it did, I think it would have resulted in Maker Faire not happening in that same period of time. And we'd be talking about it coming back in a different way now. But I think, especially speaking to what Elijah said about it not having a true New York flair to it, I think this enables you guys to start cleanly and do something that really speaks to what New York is all about, and especially Brooklyn, which is so awesome to be doing it there, especially in a place like Coney Island. So it is an incredible opportunity. And like you were saying, Scott, the first one is the toughest. And if we can all get over that particular challenge, I think there'll be a lot of support ahead. Now, Alex, I think you had something?
Yeah, I wanted to echo this sentiment about the return of Maker Faire here, because and I know you and Kyle more than anybody I possibly on this planet will agree with this, that it's a tremendous amount of work to put on a conference. I mean, you've been doing HOPE since 1994, Emmanuel, and it's...
Yeah, we're recovering from 2004, right? So we have a lot more to recover from after that.
Event planning is not for the faint of heart. You know, it's a steep endeavor.
My point is that it's literally a miracle that, you know, HOPE keeps going on like this. So the fact that you guys were all able to resurrect Maker Faire essentially from the dead here, I think it's just a wonderful accomplishment. I think it's going to be so meaningful, not just to yourselves, but to all the participants, the generations of people that are going to be going there. It's going to make such an impact in their lives. And I just wanted to say, you should be proud of yourselves and very well done.
Yes, and we'll probably say the same thing next week, too, after. Actually, we're not on next week, so we'll say it in 2 weeks. But we're going to try and make an appearance either Saturday or Sunday by driving the 2600 van into Coney Island, and hopefully it starts, and we'll see what happens. But definitely,
the van!
Yeah, the van. It still lives.
I remember, yeah, you guys still okay. I met you guys in 2016, my first Maker Faire.
Oh, wow, okay. Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, I was thinking that happened in 2017, but you just jogged my memory with the van.
Yes. Well, hopefully we'll inspire all kinds of other reactions if we're able to actually make it out there. We've been speaking with Elijah Horland, Scott Schubert, Becky Button, all of the upcoming Maker Faire this weekend at Coney Island. Scott, can you give us those websites and contact information one more time?
Sure. So our website is ConeyIslandMakerFaire.com. And Maker Faire is spelled with an E at the end, so it's Coney Island Maker Faire. Make sure you put the E at the end, .com. It's Friday through Sunday, so the Friday, October 6th through the 8th, from 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. And I just want to say, come on out, have a great time. And, you know, the other thing that people may not realize is the rides are going to be open. The food's going to be out. You know, people are still going to be having a good time. So it's not just Maker Faire over there. There's going to be a lot to do, a lot of food to eat, a lot of fun stuff to do, and good rides to go on. So come have a good time this weekend.
Okay. And hopefully you three can join us for overtime starting in a few minutes over on YouTube, Channel 2600. And hopefully we see you all starting this weekend for the reincarnation of Maker Faire at Coney Island. Hey, our friend Don Lutz, who does the intro for Off the Hook, much worse, has just put out an album, and we have a track from it. It features John Cusack, and yes, of all people, what the universe knows what you've done. Something a lot of us should keep in mind. OTH2600.com. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Telescope.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.